Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
There is one way that many of us are very, very similar. Obviously, we are all here because of our love and admiration for Georgia football. We are just enjoy that. It's a job for me, but it's also my favorite pastime. There is nothing, and this has been true for my entire life, there is nothing from sort of like a entertainment standpoint that means more to me than Georgia football means to me. I just sort of live and die, eat, sleep, and breathe it. I have for the entirety of my life. Most of you, if you're, you know, a part of the show today, are in some form or fashion probably something close to the same way. There is really nothing else for me that is like Georgia football. But there's one thing for me that probably comes somewhat close, and a lot of you are also the same way. For whatever reason, a lot of us who are really, really, really big Georgia football fans are also really, really big Atlanta Braves fans. Like, the Atlanta Braves are just sort of my number two thing. It's not quite as big as Georgia football, but just the same way I can kind of go back and, like, the earliest memories I have as a child, being taken to Braves games, watching those games on WTBS, the same sort of, like, you know, like, emotional connection I have to Georgia football, meaning so much to me and my family and just kind of how I've defined my life, the Atlanta Braves are sort of a close second for me in all of that. So it's been really fun for me the last few years. Obviously, Georgia and the Braves won championships in the same year in 2021. I think the Atlanta Braves have done a really good job of embracing Georgia football. You know, they have the branded hats. They've had Jordan Davis throughout the first pitch. We've seen Blooper at Sanford Stadium before. They invited the Georgia National Championship trophies to be, you know, at Truist Park for games there. The Braves have just done a really, really good job of embracing Georgia football. In fact, we've challenged the Atlanta Falcons to embrace Georgia football, especially since it is football and you wear the same colors and you have a little bit of a shared history because of Rankin Smith, things like that. We've challenged the Falcons to embrace Georgia as much as the Atlanta Braves will. We'll see if they take us up on that. But for now, the Atlanta Braves have done just a really good job of that. Now, I want to give you the latest example of this. Now, for the most part, this is just for fun. There's no really big hot take here or point to make about this, but I do believe there is a kind of takeaway from this that we can eventually get to. But for the most part, this is just for fun. You heard me talk the other day about our buddy Cody Chaffins. He is now one of the producers here on our show each and every day. And we're going to see a lot of Cody coming up in the months to come around Dog Nation. I think he's a really, really important addition to our team. But Cody also does some work outside Dog Nation there as well. And he was at Atlanta Braves spring training the other day and just talking about whatever else with some of the players. And one of the guys there, Michael Harris Jr. Of course, Harris grew up here in the state of Georgia. And so our Cody Chaffins, now producer on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger, had a chance to talk to Harris with the Georgia Bulldogs, and in particular, Georgia quarterback Carson Beck. Like I said before, this is just sort of for fun, just kind of a cool thing to do here on a Friday. But good stuff from our new Dog Nation Daily producer, Cody Chaffins, with Michael Harris at spring training. Safe to say, Harris has big expectations for the final year of Carson Beck in a Georgia football uniform. Let me let you see that.
I was excited because Georgia has another chance to go get a national championship, and I think he'll be the first quarterback taken in the next draft. Now that he's coming out then, so yeah, I'm excited for him to, I guess, go back out there and compete with the other dogs.
So there you go, one of our favorites, Michael Harris Jr., talking about another one of our favorites when it comes to Carson Beck. You like the symmetry of that? You like the synergy of that? The fact that Harris believes that Georgia's got a chance now to go out and win another national championship because Carson Beck is going to be that quarterback. And how about because at this point in time, you know, Georgia's got two national championships. It'd be great to win a third, but that's not the most bold, you know, prediction in the world to say, well, Georgia's going to win another national championship. We expect that Georgia could win many national championships coming up in the years to come. It's almost a slightly more bold prediction to say, and Carson Beck's going to be the first quarterback taken in the 2025 draft. That would be not only Georgia returning to its national championship glory, but sort of doing so in a slightly different way than its previous championship teams were built. Of course, Stetson Bennett became a Heisman finalist in 2022. But this is an entirely different sort of achievement even beyond that. So I wanted to get a little bit more context for this and also use this as an opportunity to kind of, I guess, introduce Cody to all of you. Cody's got a long history here working Atlanta television. You've seen him on Channel 5 throughout the years, and we are thrilled to have him here as a part of Dog Nation there as well. So, Cody, for the people who maybe want to understand more about this, give us a little bit of that sort of backstory and context about how it was that you came to be able to ask Michael Harris Jr. and the Braves about this at spring training the other day.
So, yeah, I was down in spring training with the AJC, and Brandon, thanks for letting me in front of the camera on this show. I've been behind it enjoying your work for the last few months. But Michael Harris has not been shy about his Georgia fandom. He, of course, grew up in Atlanta, Stockbridge area. And even last year before spring training, he said he was one of those people that said the Falcons should take Stetson Bennett in the first round. He was kind of joking last year, but again, not shy about his Georgia football. He's famous for his headbands. He'll wear Georgia headbands. So when we were down there, that's what I wanted to ask him. You know, spring training is a lot more laid back than everything else. So we get a chance to just kind of get to know guys. And Michael Harris is a huge Falcons fan, huge Hawks fan, and a huge Dogs fan. So I just wanted to get his reaction. So Carson Beck said he's coming back. What does that mean? And he said it. He expects Carson to be the first quarterback taken next year.
Let me tell you two things that I really like about this. Thing number one is the Atlanta Braves are very Atlanta. You know, Olsen played at Parkview. You know, Harris is from Georgia. Throughout the years, they've had a lot of sort of Atlanta area players on the team. I think it's really fun that the Braves have such a connection to the state of Georgia, the Atlanta area. You know, I'm a big Braves fan. I mentioned that before. But the fact that the Braves are so of Georgia and of the Atlanta area, I think it makes them that much more fun to root for. Michael Harris Jr. perhaps being the latest example of all of that.
Yeah, you talk about the connections with the Braves in the local area. Chase Elliott, NASCAR driver, another famous diehard Braves and Georgia Bulldogs fan. So, yeah, they've got connections all over the place. I don't think anybody took that Falcons Super Bowl loss worse than Dansby Swanson, who was also a huge Falcons fan, still is, even though he's not in Atlanta anymore.
Now, the other thing I'll say is, and I mentioned this before, I think the Braves in particular, because I'm sure they recognize the overlap that exists between Braves fans and Georgia fans, the size of the two fan bases, the fact that there's sort of a Venn diagram of people who love both. The Braves have done a really good job of embracing Georgia. You know, this is Harris just sort of speaking of his personal fandom, but as I said before, you know, we've seen Jordan Davis throw out the first pitch. We've seen the national championship trophies at Truist Park. We've seen Blooper at Sanford Stadium. You know, we've seen some sort of co-branded things between the two teams over the years. Is that the Braves seem to understand how fertile the soil is to sort of, you know, make sure they're very, very close to Dog Nation and very, very close to Georgia fans. And I really enjoy that, too. And as, you know, we get ready to start another baseball season, I think a lot of Georgia fans sort of see, you know, being a Braves fan an extension of being a Georgian the same way they, you know, kind of, you know, view rooting for UGA, too.
Yeah, there's nothing like being wanted, right? And I feel like Georgia fans are wanted by the Braves. It's the same kind of feel and the family feel that you get with both places. It's not going to be too big. It's not like a club when you go to Truist Park. Same thing at Sanford Stadium. It's just that kind of home feel that both kind of have, and very family friendly. I think both programs are very family friendly, and I think that's kind of what ties them all together. They're not trying to big time you, and they want you in there, and they want you to feel like you're a part of it.
Well, Cody, you're doing a great job here for us on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger. I'm so happy to have you part of the team, and it's fun to have stuff like this. We'll look forward to a lot more of these kinds of things coming up for you from you here in the months to come.
Yeah, I love being on board. I've been a dog all my life, so it's cool to be part of Dog Nation for real.
Well, Cody, we're glad to have you here, and that's really good stuff. And I want to keep the Carson Beck conversation going here for a minute, too, because I think there's another thing about this that I think is kind of important for us because, as I said before, we've seen Georgia win national championships, but I think it would feel a little bit different to be led to another national championship by a quarterback who's like, you know, number one pick in the draft, you know, top quarterback taken. We talked the other day about ESPN saying top returning quarterback in college football. There's just a little bit of a different feel, you know, for a team like that when you're quarterback led in a way that I would say that previous Georgia teams, even the best Georgia teams, haven't necessarily been. And to kind of frame this a little bit more, I was looking at this and I was actually a little bit surprised at how high he ranked. You know, On3, the recruiting website, also has their thing where they sort of rank NIL valuations. Now, I'll be honest with you. I think a lot of the numbers they throw around are probably just sort of made up for effect and sort of made up to sound good. I think there's some exaggeration that still exists in the NIL space, even as prevalent as it probably is. But there is still sort of some directional truth to this, even if the sort of specific numbers are not quite accurate. And what you see is that Beck is actually ninth on the list of the top NIL values among, like, you know, high school and college athletes. And the people who are, like, right there around him, these are, like, super famous people. Bronny James, LeBron's son. Shador Sanders, Deion Sanders' son. Livy Dunn, of obviously a gymnast, but also of Instagram fame. Caitlin Clark, you hear so much about her. Arch Manning, Travis Hunter, Quinn Ewers, Angel Reese, who's, you know, also kind of a big deal because of the fact that she beat Caitlin Clark in the title game or the Final Four, whatever it was, a year ago. And then Carson Beck comes in at number 9 on this list. And so the point that I'm getting to is that while it's just sort of fun to have a guy like Michael Harris, who's obviously a Georgia fan, you know, talking about Carson Beck and making big predictions for him, this could be sort of an interesting thing for us to watch and observe over the course of the next few months. If Beck really is on the verge of leading Georgia to what everybody thinks they can do, which is win another national championship, and he can prove himself to be the number one quarterback in college football, his fame is going to skyrocket because of that. Now, I don't mean locker room problem and, you know, he's about himself, not about the team. I'm not saying this in a negative way. I'm saying this is a positive way. And if you're a Georgia fan, this can be a pretty good judge of how much of this really is on the verge of coming true. Michael Harris, not a college football player, openly talking about Carson Beck and, you know, making predictions for him. As Beck gets more famous, Beck will be discussed more and more sort of outside the realm of just Dog Nation, or perhaps outside the realm of just a regular college football conversation. That's the kind of thing that happens when you're a quarterback who is as famous as we believe that Carson Beck is perhaps on his way to being. So let's watch that and see. If we see people kind of outside the typical sphere speaking about Beck, knowing who Beck is, if that's the level of fame that he's achieving, that means on the field he's probably on his way to achieving some pretty high marks there as well. And as he does that, we believe so go the Georgia Bulldogs here in 2024. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Kroger. We are happy to have you with us as part of our program today, and you get a chance to hear from Cody there. Kaylee Manziel's with us here today, too. We'll give you a little showcase for something that Kaylee did before our show is done today. We're obviously really grateful for the people behind the scenes that make a show like this possible. You hear me talk about Jay a lot. Jay's, you know, behind the scenes doing a lot of heavy lifting. We have a great team here at Dog Nation, so understand that. You may see my face every day, but there is a team of folks behind the scenes that make all this happen. And we're going to try to put some of those folks on the forefront as much as we possibly can. So really, really good stuff there. And of course, if you're tuning in today via video, we're glad to have you live at 10 a.m. or anytime after that. Radio, Athens Sports Radio 96 The Ref, podcast, wherever you find them. Just really, really happy to have you as a part of our program today. And so happy to have our friends from Kroger with us here there as well. You've perhaps detected the last couple of days a little bit of a hint that spring is sort of springing all over the place, which means that Easter is not too far away. Now, when it comes to Kroger, I want you to be thinking about getting ready for Easter there. It's at the end of March this year. You know, that's one of those sort of floating holidays that's sort of different times, sometimes in April. Well, it's in March this year. And Kroger's already got you covered for everything you need. So you want, you know, pretty decor. You want the eggs. You want the Easter candy. Very important for me, of course, that Easter candy. All the stuff to make it a great holiday experience for you and your family. One of the most important times of the year. Check out Kroger.com/Easter for more on that. It's Kroger.com/Easter for more on that. By the way, speaking of, like, being caught off guard, you know, this week the time changes. I love early, daylight savings. Don't love springing forward, but we do spring forward here this weekend. So spring forward this weekend and then spring into your local Kroger to get ready for Easter coming up. Kroger.com/Easter for more on that. We've got Jeff Sintel coming up in a moment. A lot of UGA recruiting talk to get to. In fact, some of what we get into with Jeff, I'm actually going to foreshadow a little bit here as we go around the doghouse here today, poured by our friends at the Finish Long Drink. Now, we are so excited about the 2024 season for Georgia. Some of that's because, as we said a moment ago, we just think it's really cool how big Carson Beck's star could grow and how bright he could shine before this year is done. But some of that's also because Georgia, I would say, as objectively true as we're capable of being, is playing the most interesting schedule it's ever played. First ever trip to Texas as a member of the SEC. The first ever SEC game for brand new Alabama coach Kalen DeBoer comes against the Dogs. A lot of attention on Ole Miss right now. Georgia goes to Oxford in November, a chance to be on the Grove there that day. There's just so many big games for for Georgia in this 2024 season. In fact, so many big SEC games, what is sort of a new look year for the conference, that a game that would typically be hyped beyond all, you know, possible imagination has actually sort of receded into the background a little bit. But we have some evidence that that's perhaps starting to change, that there, I think, right now is some belief that this Georgia-Clemson game to begin the 2024 season, a rematch of what took place to start the 2021 season, the first ever game to bring fans back after the debacle that was 2020, this Georgia-Clemson game, which has not gotten as much attention as of yet, is starting to get more attention. I'm going to give you quickly here sort of three reasons why all of a sudden there's a lot more talk about Georgia-Clemson than perhaps I expected. Now, the reason why I wasn't sure how much of this we'd get is because the fortunes of these two programs have really changed. When Georgia played Clemson in 2021, Georgia was actually a small underdog going into that game. It was Clemson who had been in however many straight college football playoffs. Georgia had only been to the one. Georgia was sort of facing a, well, if they don't win the national championship this year, when are they ever going to do it? That was the chatter that was out there. As you know, Georgia did win that national championship, and they won the next one. And Clemson, who had been sort of a national championship-level program prior to that, fell from that spot and really hasn't been back close to that since then. So the fortunes for the two programs change. We believe that on paper right now, Georgia's probably about a two-touchdown favorite over Clemson. So we sort of thought maybe just a little bit less attention maybe on that Georgia-Clemson game. Maybe not, based on some of the stuff that's out there. I want to start with this. You know, Bruce Feldman's a national writer, works for an outlet called The Athletic. And the other day, he ranked his top coaches in college football. And when he shared this on X, one of the things that Bruce said was that in ranking the top 25 coaches in college football, the first one is easy. We actually talked about that the other day, that the fact that there's a huge gap in Feldman's perception between Kirby Smart and anybody else that comes next on his list. But what Feldman also says is that the second coach on that list is easy as well. And you may be surprised, to be honest with you, I kind of was surprised, that the coach that Feldman currently ranks second best in all of college football is Clemson's Dabo Swinney. And if you're doing this on the basis of resume and accomplishments, well, of course Swinney would be up there on that list. He's got two national championships. He is, other than Kirby Smart, obviously the most accomplished coach currently active in the sport of college football. I don't think there's much argument about that. But as I said before, you know, results in 2021, results in 2022, results in 2023 seem to suggest that the actual performance from Swinney doesn't really match the resume anymore. But according to Feldman, this is still the second best coach in college football. So just say that out loud for a moment. Whether you know Bruce Feldman or not, whether you respect his opinion or not, if it is true that the best coach in college football is going to take on the second best coach in college football, all of a sudden that game seems like a much bigger deal, doesn't it? That's kind of the vibe the game has, that the small number of coaches actively with national championships, two of those are going to battle each other in Atlanta to begin the upcoming season. And in addition to that, despite the fact that, as I said, Clemson's overall performance as of late, not exactly stellar, there's some belief coming out of Clemson that maybe this year can be a little bit different. One of our great listeners and viewers who's always kind enough to share a lot of stuff with us, he shared this with me yesterday. Cade Klubnik, the Clemson quarterback, apparently has some big belief about what Clemson might be able to do this season. In fact, he thinks the Tigers can be undefeated. So long way away from a college football, you know, playoff level of success lately, but perhaps more successful here this upcoming season. Do we have the Klubnik quote? Can we read that here? Maybe we don't have that. Cade Klubnik talking about Clemson being undefeated, but our buddy Georgia on Tap had shared that with me. You know, the notion that Clemson might be able to do that this year, might be able to be undefeated, perhaps taking a big step forward to be a better team than it's been in the past and perhaps more competitive. And in addition to that, there we go. Here's Georgia on Tap, who shared this with me. He sort of sarcastically says, hey, it's always good to have goals. And that's in reference to the fact that Cade Klubnik, the Clemson quarterback, recently said, our goal is to go undefeated. And I fully believe this is the team that can do it. I think we've got every single piece. Well, all of a sudden, if anything close to that's true, then perhaps he thinks they can be more competitive than the sort of two-touchdown underdog status they sort of have to begin the season in that game against Georgia. Pretty big talk coming from Cade Klubnik. Now, listen, we don't treat that as bulletin board material. We expect you know, Clemson to think it can win all its games. But the point is like, if that's the aspiration that exists in Clemson right now, perhaps up there in the upstate, as they like to call it, their view of the game against Georgia, maybe it is a bigger deal than we've given it credit for being. But perhaps most important and more important than any of that is the other thing that matters for Georgia and Clemson right now, which is, and I thought that Jeff Sintel did a really good job talking about this on Wednesday before the Hedges presented by Kroger, and we're going to talk to him more about this here in a moment, but the fact that Georgia and Clemson, who will play each other in the on the football field to begin the season, are going to do battle a lot on the recruiting trail prior to that, perhaps specifically for one of the top prospects in the 2025 class, the five-star offensive lineman, David Sanders. In fact, I want to read this to you from Jeff at DogNation.com, who recently updated the story on Sanders, who recently dropped his top six and got a number of high-profile visits here coming up. Let me read you from Jeff, and then we'll talk to Jeff about this. He writes, "The belief here at Dog Nation is that the Bulldogs are one of the real contenders among that final six to sign David Sanders. They've been right near the top of his options for a long time. But," Jeff writes, and this is where you get really interesting, "there have been reports that Clemson might be a slight favorite here to win the battle with Sanders." Jeff going on to say, "Other national recruiting analysts feel like Clemson, Georgia, and, believe it or not, Tennessee are the schools with the best chance to sign Sanders. The feeling here is it'll be all about the visits. Sanders told Dog Nation that he feels like those upcoming unofficial visits during spring practice for these programs will be just as important as his official visits, if not more so." So the bottom line on all of this is that we're probably guilty here of not talking enough about Clemson as of late. The fact that they believe, according to their quarterback, they could be much better this season than they've been. The fact that some people believe that Dabo Swinney is still a top coach in college football. And the fact that the eyes on Matt Luke, the new offensive line coach, trying to wrestle away some elite offensive line prospects who might otherwise land at Georgia. It sounds like we have not talked enough about Clemson as of late, but there is certainly plenty to be said and discussed about Clemson here moving forward. Things are about to get very, very interesting with Georgia and one of its traditional rivals. When I was a kid, Georgia Clemson played all the time, geographically obviously very close. And they'll be on the same field in September in Atlanta and also battling a lot on the recruiting trail as a lead-up to all of that. And that is Around the Doghouse here today, poured by our friends at the Finnish Long Drink. Now, yesterday for me was one of those absolutely perfect Finnish Long Drink kind of days. It's 70-something degree temperatures, wonderful to be outside, plenty of sunshine, all kinds of great stuff going on with all of that. And it just kind of reminded me, boy, sitting on the back porch right now or a patio or front porch or just wherever and just soaking up some sunshine and enjoying some Finnish Long Drink. What a great way to spend Thursday afternoon. Of course, for us, that means the peach-flavored version. Here in the Peach State, for a limited time, you can enjoy some of that. It's kind of a cool, special flavor of the Finnish Long Drink, but there are other varieties you can enjoy there as well. I still, to this day, probably love the grapefruit flavor, kind of the traditional. It's the blue can, and I love the way, like, the condensation sort of drips down the side of the can. I also love the gin kick. I love all of that. Long Drink Cranberry, Long Drink Strong, 8.5% alcohol by volume, Long Drink Zero, no carbs, no sugar. Probably need as much of that as I can get as you sort of roll into being on a Lure of the Seas coming up and all that kind of stuff, making sure you get the right bathing suit sort of body, probably the right way to do that. The Long Drink Zero helps us out with that. Either way, if you want to enjoy a ready-to-drink cocktail, you love mixed drinks, but you don't want to mix it yourself, you just want to pop the top and enjoy it straight out of the can, that's what our friends at the Finnish Long Drink are all about. So go to thelongdrink.com, and you can put in your zip code, you can find out where you can pick some up today, and you can also hear the great story about how this sort of started off in the Finland back in the 1950s, summer games were in Helsinki, and now how it's in America, here in Georgia, and wherever you are there as well. So go to thelongdrink.com. You can find out where to pick that up today. The Finnish Long Drink, a great way to enjoy your weekend. We appreciate them bringing Around the Doghouse to us here today. So Georgia and Clemson battling over David Sanders, perhaps battling over Josh Petty, perhaps battling over some other recruits there as well. All of this sort of a prelude to the game that's going to take place to open the 2024 season. Let's talk about that and a pretty big change coming to the way in which players sign, National Signing Day, moving from where it has been up a few weeks. Let's cover all of that ground and more as we welcome on Jeff Sintel here today, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.
Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
All right, let's say hello to Jeff Sintel here, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. And Jeff, I was just talking about something that you had, you know, somewhat written about at DogNation.com, but certainly discussed on your program Before the Hedges, presented by Kroger on Wednesday. You know, Georgia Clemson to open the 2024 season. We certainly aren't hyping this right now the way we hyped it when these two teams played in 2021. But when you hear some of the buzz coming into Clemson, the fact that I think that Dabo Swinney recognizes they need to greatly upgrade their offensive line, and Matt Luke, a guy that Georgia fans know very well, has been tasked with doing that. I get the impression that we're about to, on this show, start talking about Clemson a lot more than we've been talking about them. So let's do that right now. As it relates to David Sanders, how big of a threat do you believe Clemson is for a player that you and I talked about last week that stands as one of the biggest possible gets for Georgia here in this class of 2025?
I kind of think that that's really going to be the difference between Georgia having the number one class again in 2025, or maybe finishing just a mere second or third, because there's a lot of battles, man, and this is kind of going to be – I think I look at Clemson right now as this is either going to be a recharge for Dabo's career. I think he's 30-10 over the last few seasons, but he did lose four ACC games a year ago, and I think Sanders is a name. I think Bryce Davis is a name. That's an edge defensive lineman that the Dogs really like in this class out of North Carolina. There's Mason Short. Kind of goes on and on. There's a lot of prospects, I believe, in the 2025 class that have Georgia and Clemson way up there on the list. And I do feel Clemson's a real threat. He told me that Clemson is the team that kind of tugs on his heartstrings. And I thought that was real when he said that, because he remembers as a little kid begging his mom if he could stay up late to watch Clemson in the national championship. And he remembers watching them run down that hill. And that was kind of the childhood image that kind of motivated David Sanders to be great. And listen, Matt Luke, he's got to sell something. I think it's very curious, Brandon. I'd love to hear your take on it, but he's got to sell something else besides Clemson's offensive line history. Because I went and looked back at Clemson's offensive line history when I wrote something a few weeks ago, and they've got a guard that went in the fifth round. They got a tackle that went, that was 2023. They got a tackle that went in the second round in 2021, a guard in 2020 that went fourth, another guard that went seventh round in 2020. And, you know, 2015 is the next one prior to that. And they had a tackle taken in the supplemental draft. And then 2014, another tackle in the third round. Brennan, to do the history, I had to go all the way back to 1960 to find the last time Clemson had a first round offensive tackle come out of that program. Now, enter Matt Luke, great recruiter, great personality, did a solid job recruiting talent for Georgia, kind of retained a guy like Broderick Jones, and he could say, like, the depth of Georgia at the offensive line position, most specifically the offensive tackle, we just got to kind of frankly say it's not really close, man. You look at Isaiah Wynn, you look at Isaiah Wilson, you look at Andrew Thomas, of course, and now you got Broderick Jones. I mean, that's four first-round offensive tackles since 2017. You don't have to really go back that far and look at the development. You saw how Ernest Green started a redshirt freshman year at Georgia at tackle, even though the recruiting industry had him as a guard. I think that there's a lot of pieces in the Georgia 2025 class that they're going to have to get past Clemson for.
So I want to talk to you about two things that relates to this, and you kind of touched on, I think, both things that I think are interesting. First of all, as you said, even going back to when Clemson was sort of a national championship level program, they still didn't have very good offensive lines. I would say most of this is related to the fact they're just not as aggressive at like making the offers, the early offers. You know, you got to really get in there and sort of throw a lot of elbows if you want to win line of scrimmage recruiting battles. And, you know, Clemson had Brent Venables. They did plenty of that on defense because they had a lot to sell. But even when they had like Trevor Lawrence and Deshaun Watson, and even when they were competing for national championships, they were not typically very strong along the offensive line. It's pretty clear that they are, I think, right now, admitting that fact and also trying to greatly upgrade a position that you gave the specific numbers for. And you can go back and cite the recruiting battles that they did not win as a, you know, kind of a reason for all that. It's pretty obvious they're trying to upgrade a position that historically they've just not been very good at, even when the team overall has been stellar.
I think it's kind of a culture of the ACC, Brandon. I don't think the ACC is a line of scrimmage league. Guys, that's Peaches over there. Whenever we talk about offensive line play, she gets really excited. But I don't think Clemson is a line of scrimmage in a line of scrimmage league, and they can win with great quarterback and great skill. And that's how they kind of move the chains on a lot of their big victories. That gets them to the playoffs, and they had a great success in the playoffs with their best team, but you maybe hold up depth a little bit better when you go through the ACC. So I think there's a lot of stuff there. I think the chief thing with Clemson, and I mentioned a couple of names. There's also like Isaiah Gibson, he's a big time edge out of Warner Robins. His former teammate Vic Burley is now a defensive end at Clemson. You've got Christian Garrett out of Prince Avenue Christian, another guy that's got an official visit scheduled to Clemson to go check out Clemson as well. So there's a lot of pieces, a lot of potential pieces for Georgia's 2025 class that they're going to go against. And really, Clemson's going to have to do something there with its line of scrimmage play, because they're not just going to have to win one or two games anymore in a playoff format. They're going to have to win four or five. And I think that's where you need a lot more of those big monsters on the offensive line to make that happen.
The other thing you bring up is, and it pains me to ask this question because I genuinely think like this person, but is Matt Luke a great recruiter? Because, you know, I don't know that if he was on trial for that, based on his time at Georgia, you'd have enough evidence to convict him.
Yeah, you know, Brandon, you opened the door. I'll kind of trot through there a little bit, man. Let's just look at the numbers. Largely the 2022 recruiting class for Georgia's offensive line, that was Matt Luke. And there's not a lot of positives out of that class. I think very few are still within the program. You do have Ernest Green III is a guy that came in that class, but you have a lot of other projects. Jacob Hood, for example, Alu Ba, Griffin Scroggs, you know, those three guys are no longer in the program. They've transferred out. One went to Nebraska, one went to Maryland, one went to Appalachian State. They're never really going to be viable at Georgia, and they figured that out very quickly. So, offensive line has just been so stacked at Georgia, where Broderick and Warren McClendon, you know, those were the guys that kept Amarius Mims from only playing and basically starting eight games for Georgia. Of course, the injury, the tightrope surgery did a lot to that. But the depth there is something. And one thing about Sanders, he's told me, because I know that's a popular narrative among fans, is it's like, hey, is he throwing on the weight? Is he putting on the weight? And David told me last weekend that he's up to 276, which is very encouraging because he's pretty close to, you know, being around 285, 290 for his senior year. That's where you need to be to play in the SEC, play early in the SEC. And David told me, matter-of-factly, that he's going to come in with a body ready to play somewhere in big-time college football. He's going to contend for reps in big-time college football. So the only thing he's going to have to learn is basically scheme. He's a premier athlete, Brandon. We can't stress that enough. Premier athlete at offensive tackle. And, you know, Sanders is doing everything he needs to be able to play right away. Another thing I asked him, though, very curious part of his recruiting as well, is there a spot that sets up better for him to play right away? And you might think that there are some schools like that. You might think that, you know, Georgia is probably not a school that sets up really well to play right away. Same thing for maybe in Alabama, whereas other schools, maybe he could play right away. David matter-of-factly told me that that's not going to be a factor. He's going to come in ready to play, ready to grab some reps, maybe not start, but play a lot that first year. And we never say that should happen in the SEC, Brandon. Kirby Smart has even went on diatribes about it, saying it's just really hard for a first-year player to be ready to play in the SEC. But I think David is one of those special talents. If he's up around 315, 320 after about another 20, 30 more pounds from now to then, in terms of maybe he gets a full 6, 7, 8 months of strength and conditioning at a place like a big-time place like in Alabama or Georgia, I think he puts himself into contention to play first, maybe not first, but second team reps if he is 315, 310 by the time he's a college freshman.
Big news this week, and I believe this is official. I believe this is now, everything is always sort of speculation and could happen and blah, blah, blah. It's almost like when something actually is happening, it sort of gets obscured by all of the speculation that sort of exists prior to that. But national signing day is changing. The early signing period is moving up, right? That's been, and I've been very clear, I hate the early signing period where it has been. Late December, you know, right before the college football playoff, right around Christmas. I just am not a fan of that at all. If I had my way, we'd go back to having it one day in February. I sort of understand why that doesn't work great for everybody. But if I had my way, if I had full control, if I was an authoritarian leader, which I aspire to be, I would. You know, that is what I would do. That's what I would want. Instead, we're moving it up 3 weeks. And this doesn't sound very good either because it's the week of the conference championship games. I also don't know if it's any worse. I really don't know right now how to feel about this. Is it better or worse for Georgia in particular, for college football in general? What do you think, Jeff, about the idea that now the early signing period is going to be 3 weeks sooner than it's been in the past?
Yeah, it's funny, Brandon. Kind of things you talk about around the Sintel family table at supper time, man. Let me use a supper time here. My wife and my kids, where we were talking about it, and they wanted to say, explain this to me like, you know, we're a fifth grader. You know, explain this to me so I can understand it. And I kind of think the way I try to verbalize it is I kind of felt that National Signing Day, and is it the National Signing Day, Brandon, you know this, it was the one in December. That's when 98% of the top guys signed, and nobody really does February anymore. Nobody's really in high school in February anymore. They're all enrolling early. And I tried to explain them to them. I was like, I want you to picture Christmas Vacation. And that's what it was like. Of course, the famed Chevy Chase movie. I want you to picture that before the ruckus, the chaos, and everything else. And it was always very hard to deal with. The early period, getting guys enrolled. Some teams were going through still in practices, getting ready. But that came about with the 2018 class. That's the first time we saw that. But then all of a sudden, the transfer portal happened last year. And I fathom that as like, that was Cousin Eddie showing up in the RV. And then everything really got crazy, got wildly unpredictable, and it was a mess. I've heard quagmire, I've heard, you know, foobar, I've heard lots of different ways to describe from college coaches and everyone else about what last December was like. Here's what they're trying to do. They're trying to take away one of the juggling balls, one of the variables here. And that is, much to the chagrin of some high school coaches and even some high school players, they're trying to control one valve of unexplainable, one X factor in the equation here. And that's what they're trying to do with moving up early signing day. Because what they do, Brandon, is they're trying to figure out what their rosters are going to look like. And if they have one variable set in terms of, okay, this is what our defensive tackle picture looks like, this is what our tight end picture looks like, these are the players that we know we need to make room for, then when the portal opens up, they've got a better idea of what's going on. Like last year, college coaches were trying to figure out, okay, we're signing this guy, right? And if we don't sign this guy, we've got to go after this guy in the portal. And it was just very confusing. Meanwhile, you're going to add in the 12-team playoff this December, where they're going to have to do another thing that they really don't want to do except trying to win football games that month. And the feedback, Brandon, has been pretty wide ranging. Yeah, I've got high school coaches, and then we got to make this clear that they've moved this one up 2 weeks, mostly 2 to 3 weeks, depending on when the Wednesday fell in the calendar. But the other thing that's still on the table, not determined yet, is what they're going to do in terms of another earlier signing day. They want to keep the one in February. I think that one's basically a dinosaur, but they're kind of kicking the tires on, should there be one in late July? Should there be one in August? And that's one that's really interesting, because I think if you do that, you're going to have to engineer a loophole into all of those regulations in terms of if college coach leaves, college coordinator leaves, college position coach leaves, then you could also be released from your document that they signed from your national letter of intent. Back in the summer. It's also another culture. There's so many things to talk about here, Brandon, but I think by that time, everybody's offers, everybody's deals will kind of be cards on the table. So maybe young men will feel a little bit better about going ahead and signing during the summer period. That's one positive perhaps for that, or that's another reason, you know, another reason why this stuff's really on the table. Another big thing for me, Brandon, I'm a big kind of champion of high school teams, high school football, and trying to preserve the high school experience. Yeah. You're going to have young men trying to sign and decide where they're going to go with like a Wednesday ceremony when their teams are going to be playing in the state championship bracket for Georgia. I believe it would be the semis. That's not good either. A lot of high school coaches and college coaches I've talked to have said, yeah, but you're just really thinking about the top 300 players in the country. You're also just thinking about the top 300 players in the country that are playing on one of those teams that are alive in week 13, 14, or 15. That's a good point as well, but I know it just doesn't feel right at the same time.
Well, here's the other thing, too. I mean, the people that run college football are proving themselves to be incapable of recognizing unintended consequences over and over and over again. By moving this up like this, here's what I can guarantee is going to happen. We're also going to move the coaching carousel into the season. We're going to have way more coaches get fired during the season because teams want to have a chance of having some success in the signing day, which means the replacements for the coaches that get fired are going to be mentioned in the rumor mills in like late October, early November, like right in the middle of the season. So if you're so-and-so hot coordinator, you're going to be facing those questions of, are you leaving to go take, you know, job X? And if you're sitting head coach who's kind of looking to move up, and there always are these guys, you're going to be facing those questions like during the season, because the school that thinks it can hire you, they want to leak that because they want players to want to come to their program. So by moving the signing day up, we're taking one of the craziest parts of the college football calendar, which is the coaching carousel, and we're not going to do that during the season. Mark my words, that's going to happen.
There's a lot of stuff that really doesn't make sense, Brandon. I went through a thought exercise just to kind of try to feel it out. I went through a thought exercise with last year's Georgia class, right? You remember July was so busy. Official visit season was the month of June. Commitment season was the month of July. And I kind of looked and I said to myself, knowing what I know, knowing what was happening behind the scenes, if these young men could have signed on August the 1st, for example, there's one very prominent high school coach in the state of Georgia that said there should just be a signing date on August the 1st. And then that should take care of that. You get it before your high school season. You make sure that the commitments and those dates are honored. That way young men kind of don't feel bad about an injury that may happen. Their future's secured. But Brendan, I also heard listened to another prominent high school coach in the state that wondered, okay, here's what's going to happen. And this may reflect negatively on the kid, but you're going to have a kid that signs in August or whatever the date they set, and they're going to be like maybe in the middle of 110s or conditioning or whatever. They're going to say, you know what? Deuces, I'm out. I'm going to go wait until December and go play football. But we've seen in the past with some of those, like, remember those written official scholarship offers that come out? One of the things that's on Georgia's verbiage and other schools is that this offer is contingent on you completing your senior season. So maybe they can engineer kind of one another bylaw into that. And I don't think that will happen with every high school player, but I guess it will be a thought that a high school coach might lose control of their players a little bit because they're already signed away and sealed away. So there's a lot of stuff here. The thing I want to come back to is that I feel like, you know, Georgia signed 28 high school players last year, I believe. I feel like 20, 22 of those, probably 18 to 20 of those would have went ahead and signed in late July or whatever arbitrary date we're talking about. Of course, this is the Georgia football program, the best recruiting, the one with the NFL development, the one with the premier type at the time, back-to-back national champions. With everything possible going in their favor, they could lure in players like that. I think that will be a lot different. Another thing that kind of pains me is Georgia, as you all know, Brandon, they've made a living off of finding those. I kind of classify it in my internal vocabulary as a senior that finally swallows the grow-up pill, which means maybe they get themselves right. Maybe they get their grades right. Maybe they have a new positive mentor in their life. Whatever happens, that 6'6", 360-pound kid, now 6'6" and 310, and a totally different eval and a totally different totally different type of prospect situation there. Maybe you miss out on a lot of that when Georgia has, you know, 25 high school scholarships they can offer high school players, and they've already signed away 20 before the start of the fall season. But it's got to be different. The one thing it always seems that happens here where the ball keeps moving is it's like, let's just put more on the high school teams, the high school players, and the high school kids. Let's make it harder for them. so we can deal with our own mess over here, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We've gone very late, so let me just squeeze in one more thing before we go. Interesting updates from you this week at DogNation.com. Cortez Smith, an offensive lineman from Parkview, I really like a lot. C.J. Wiley, a wide receiver from Milton, I really like a lot. Our buddy Terrence Edwards, of course, working closely with him. Give me a little bit of an update on some of these in-state recruits and kind of where things stand for them, and I'll give you the freedom of doing this quickly because I know you've got a lot to do today.
Yeah, I think, Brendan, it's remember the dead period kind of opened back up so people can visit. They can't visit on campus, but they can go check in at schools. I think C.J. Wiley, guy you're seeing right there, a guy I really like, he visited Alabama this week. Clemson is basically hosting their prototype skeleton model of the class that they want to put together in 2025 this weekend. A lot of guys are going to come visit Georgia so they can kind of be embedded and go through spring practice. You remember the stories of a year ago where it's funny how we got to remind this about how crazy high school football recruiting still is. I remember hearing the stories of how Dylan Raiola was on the Georgia practices following Mike Bobo's group around, had a call sheet running around, scurrying around like he was a member of the team. And, you know, sometimes a lot of that doesn't come to fruition as well. So there's a lot of visit season taking place. Brandon, you can kind of count me among the congregation now that kind of feels like recruiting season really takes place for real from, you know, right now from mid-March until May. And then you get into June with the official visits. And, you know, really the stretch run now for a lot of this recruiting, especially at a national level, is between March and July. And then everybody likes to have the hay in the barn by then and go play and go win football games. And there's going to be maybe two or three outliers every year. That's such great film there with C.J. Wiley. I don't think he's getting enough credit for how good he is on three, kind of skyrocketed his evaluation there because he can go up and get the ball. He's a hard worker, SEC legacy, an NFL legacy, 6'4", 196. He's running track now, Brandon. He told me he had a PR of 11 flat. He wants to get to 10.5 during his junior year and watch him catch it and go, man. That's the type of guy that Georgia has to make mountains here in terms of trying to really secure a lot of that in-state talent that initially we're not at that five-star range where they knew it was going to be a crazy recruitment. Travis Smith's another great example. His rankings keep climbing as well. So you're going to see a lot of guys visiting, and I would call it jockeying in terms of trying to figure out where their best fits are before the real kind of show starts in June with all those official visits.
All right, Jeff, really good stuff. Thank you for being here today. And, of course, we got a lot going on in March. As you said before, you move ahead of by next weekend. You're talking about some of the top names in all of the 2025 class expected to come into Athens. So we know you'll have plenty of coverage for us on that, both Before the Hedge is presented by Kroger every Wednesday night and, of course, on the pages of DogNation.com each and every day. Jeff, have a great weekend. And we'll look forward to having you back on the program again very soon right here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.
Take it easy, Brandon. Everybody have a great Friday.
You too.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
In addition to all that really good recruiting information, Jeff's been getting me really excited about the Dog Nation Cruise as well. We do a little morning call with our Dog Nation team to sort of set the tone for the day. And Jeff's been talking about, hey, time to get, you know, registered for some of those shows. You know, about a month or so out, you get or a little bit more than that, maybe you get a chance to start, you know, securing your spot from some of the great Broadway style entertainment or the Aqua Theater show for the high diving and things like that. You can start doing that and then sort of, you know, register and reserve your time to get on the ship. It's time to start doing that kind of stuff. I love all of that. With that, great way to transition to cruising around the SEC. Courtesy of Royal Caribbean. I always say cruising around the SEC, but I guess technically speaking, it's cruising. I have a tendency to drop my G's. But nonetheless, if you say cruising or you say cruising, whatever else, we are going to have a great time on board Allure of the Seas coming up in April. And Jeff Sintel is already excited about that. We are all already very excited about that. And I hope that you are there as well. We're going to get a chance to hang out with some of our Dog Nation cruisers here coming up really soon. And I'm just looking forward to that. And I tell you, I say it all the time, just excited about the things that Royal Caribbean's got in store for you here in 2024. And really glad to have a great expert like Jessica Slater. You know, Royal Caribbean believes that a great Royal Caribbean cruise vacation made even better when you use a terrific travel agent to help you plan that. It just makes the whole thing go better because there are a lot of variables and options when it comes to a cruise like this. Do you want to be on Allure of the Seas? Where's Allure of the Seas sailing? What port's it sailing out of? And for me, that's kind of how I typically start this. You know, it's like, when I can, I like to sail out of Port Canaveral because that's the port that's the closest to us. And you sort of find out, okay, well, what ships are sailing out of Port Canaveral right now? Your great travel agent like Jessica Slater can help you out with that. And what are the things that take place on that ship? For instance, look at, you had two flow riders in the back of Allure of the Seas. You look just below that. That's the Boardwalk neighborhood. You see the Aqua Theater there where the high diving shows take place. You see the mini golf. You see all of the terrific things that go on there. And you see the ship sailing right there just outside of Perfect Day Coco Cay. Man, great time to be thinking about all of that. We're only a few weeks away from being there. So Jessica Slater can tell you more about it. Give her a call, 770-718-9147. That's 770-718-9147. Or email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com. If it's not the Dog Nation cruise, maybe it's Icon of the Seas or Utopia of the Seas or any of the other fun things that Royal Caribbean's got debuting here in 2024. All right, let's talk for a moment here. This is a wild story. It is almost certainly fake news, but it is interesting nonetheless. And I want to try to share this with you here just a little bit. So there is sort of a crazy rumor out there involving a player who, former Vanderbilt player, who, you know, he spoke on like a podcast. He's basically a quarterback at Vanderbilt. And what he said was, you know, something to the effect of that, you know, he was approached, he was at Jason Aldean's bar. That was a part of this too. So he's at Jason Aldean's bar in Nashville. All the famous country musicians have, you know, their version of that. So he's at Jason Aldean's bar, and someone from, he calls the mob, comes up to him and was basically like, you know, essentially wanted to pay him off to throw a football game against Alabama because that's what he said that they did, that the Alabama football games were fixed. This is obviously all really, really silly. But while I don't believe this is a real story, I would certainly watch this movie, right? I mean, it's like, it's not a real story and it's not true news, but it's certainly fascinating. I saw this on a Twitter account called Blue Bloods Bias. The quarterback is Mo Hassan, I believe that's how you say his name, and he was on a podcast interview. Now, the quote is real. The story perhaps is exaggerated. What Mo said on some podcast, he was on the Momentum podcast. He says, I was approached at Jason Aldean's bar in Nashville by the Italian mob, he says, to fix football games. He offered me $300,000. And Hassan said that the University of Alabama, I'll tell you that, the mobster said that almost every game in the SEC is rigged. So there you go. According to Mo Hassan, your assumptions that SEC football games are rigged, according to Mo here, that is indeed the case. And we said before, this particular story, probably fake news. Would I watch this movie? If this was like a Netflix documentary, would I watch this? I watched that one that spent 4 days watching that dumb, what do you call it? The Octopus Murders. Pretty good story. You get to the end. Total waste of time. So frustrated. But if this was like a Netflix type thing, would I watch this? Yeah, I guess I probably would. This seems like it'd probably be a pretty interesting thing. If for nothing else, the idea that Alabama football is tied up to the mob. I mean, some of y'all are like really good at like AI. I'd love to hear like the Godfather theme, like played on a banjo. Plomp, 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 plomp. I think that'd be pretty good. Just the whole idea this is sort of tied in. But I will say this. While this particular story is probably fake, at least that's the assumption, this doesn't quite pass the smell test for me. There was a story last night in college athletics that I think by appearances could have a lot more reality to it. You know, there was a lot of suspicious betting activity involving a Temple basketball game. And reportedly, based on some of the gambling sites that I follow, this is not the first time this year that Temple basketball games have come under some suspicion here. So this is not proven either, but it has a lot more of sort of the whiff of reality because there were dramatic change in the point spread prior to the game, and not the first time that's happened for Clemson here this year, which sort of brings me back to what I've told you before. I don't believe that the mob is buying off SEC quarterbacks, nor do I believe that you'd have to pay a Vanderbilt quarterback to have Vanderbilt take a dive against Alabama. This is Vandy versus Alabama, after all, nonetheless. But while I don't believe that, as we've said before, you know, the biggest driver of sort of new revenue in sports right now seems to be sports wagering. And we're not anti-wagering, of course. But what we've always said is that because college athletics is so large, there are 130-something football teams, there are like, what, 400 Division I basketball teams, That is a lot to regulate. And the athletes are just sort of hanging out at Jason Aldean's bar sometimes. It's not like NFL where the quarterback lives behind a wall in a gated community that has another gate around it and a moat around that, and you can't ever get to them. You can get to these college athletes. They're just hanging out at their local bars and, you know, perhaps a little bit more susceptible to some of this. And when bad stuff goes down, it's not quite as easy to spot right away because the landscape of games is just so large. And so when it comes to the sports books and their ability to kind of keep eyes on all of the different things that are going on out there, college athletics and gambling are a weird mix, not just because the athletes are susceptible, but because the sports books that don't want to lose money on bad lines and bad lines made worse because of a, you know, a sort of a predetermined outcome or something like that, it's just hard for them to keep eyes on all of this. And I just think the weird mix between sports wagering, which is all the rage, and college athletics, I think we're going to see more examples of how do these two entities sort of coexist when it's sort of hard for one to keep watch over the other. Whether the, you know, the Vanderbilt quarterback thing has any ring of truth to it or not, we would suggest that it probably doesn't. Plus, as we've said before, you know, if we're going to buy into a large-scale conspiracy theory, our large-scale conspiracy theory would not be that the SEC games are rigged in favor of Alabama. It's that all games are sort of rigged against teams like Alabama and Georgia and Ohio State and Michigan. As we said before, you go and look at the teams that had the fewest penalties called on opponents this past year, it was all the very best teams. 100 and something, 120 something and below, it's Michigan, Ohio State, Georgia, Bama, Oregon was in there. You know, the teams that were so Texas was at the almost the very bottom. We have a suspicion of how the Big 12 refs probably handled Texas here this year. The teams at the very bottom in terms of penalties called against opponents were all the very best teams. So there's a grand scale conspiracy, not led by the mob, but just sort of led by people who would benefit from it. It's actually to try to make the games a little closer for the very best teams as opposed to not. Now, Georgia fans will say, well, what about the, you know, the Isaiah Bond catch that should have been overturned? That was obviously a really bad call, and the fact that it wasn't reviewed was really bad too. But I sort of ascribe that to more like laziness and incompetence than I do some sort of rigged thing in favor of Alabama or the mob or anything like that. That was a bad moment, and I believe that Georgia never quite got its fair shake in any of that, especially the description after the fact. But that's more about just sort of laziness and incompetence, the two things that sort of plague a lot of things in life, more so than actual mob probably fixing the games. But nonetheless, you make this into a movie, I'll watch it. Would I want to hear AI of the Godfather theme played on a banjo like you might find in the state of Alabama? Maybe that's the case. There's been some photos lately that sort of make it look like Nick Saban maybe going a little more natural, especially on the sides with the hair. Seeing him get like the silver wings like Paulie Walnuts had in The Sopranos, I wouldn't mind that either. So we'll let you know where that goes. Speaking of Alabama, tough look here. So their legendary broadcaster is Eli Gold. Eli Gold legitimately has had some health issues, and obviously we even, you know, said some prayers for him at the time when all that was going on. But there was kind of a weird breakup between Gold and Alabama where Eli Gold, he's stepping down, not doing the football games anymore, not working for Alabama at all anymore. And he made it very clear that this was not his decision. He wasn't retiring and that he was healthy enough to do these games. And he made it very clear that Alabama did not want him to do the games anymore, which is a little bit of, I mean, listen, I've told you this before. God willing, I plan on doing this show or some show like it until I'm like 80-something years old. Whoever I'm working for at the time, if I'm still working for a corporation, they're absolutely going to have meetings and boardroom discussions about how do we get this old guy to give it up. Like I totally get the idea of whatever walk of life you're in, I'm going to hang on as long as I can, and you can, you know, do whatever you need to do to get me fired up to do the job, but I'm not giving it up willingly. I'm going to hang on to it as long as I possibly can. Trust me when I tell you, I'd be the exact same way. But the point is, it seems like Eli Gold wanted to keep on doing the job a little longer than Alabama wanted him to. So much so that Eli Gold has announced he's going to be the play-by-play broadcaster for Jacksonville State, like, which a lot of people don't realize this. Jacksonville State's not in Florida. Jacksonville State is in Alabama. So you could win a bar bet with somebody just telling them that this weekend, that Jacksonville State in Alabama, Eli Gold is now the play-by-play voice of the Jacksonville State Gamecocks because apparently Alabama didn't want him anymore. And listen, I don't fault Gold for this. You know, it's like you want to work, keep working. I think that you're well within your rights to do that. But, boy, a little bit of a tough look for Alabama of, for whatever reason, they're sort of ready to move on to the next phase of their broadcast life, and you want to sort of pay homage to a legend. You like the clean break, the idea of the gracious retirement, but in the case of Eli Gold at Alabama, that is not what they're getting. A little bit of an awkward situation there in Tuscaloosa. And then finally, one more to give you here. So this is outside the SEC. Ohio State quarterback Denzel Burke talked about why it was he chose to come back to Ohio State instead of going to the NFL draft. And he said he's here to win a national championship, which, once again, we sort of feel the same way about this we did about Kate Klubnik. It's not bulletin board material for Kate Klubnik to say, hey, we believe we're going to win all of our games. Well, as a player, you have that level of confidence. Denzel Burke's kind of the same way here. But what we do sort of find interesting about this is it kind of plays into what we've been talking about a lot when it comes to the belief that college football is becoming very much sort of a win now type of sport, that it's all about loading up and trying to do in a given year what you can do and let the future take care of itself. And if that's true for anybody, that's especially true for Ohio State here at the moment. You know, Chip Kelly comes as an offensive coordinator. A lot of dollars spent on NIL. We're led to believe that was a huge influence for Caleb Downs, why he went there. It is just obvious that Ryan Day's feeling the pressure. He thinks he could be fired. Ohio State watches their hated rival Michigan win a national championship. They want to change that. Getting very, very aggressive here. Denzel Burke saying, I'm here to win a national championship. That's why I came back. Being very open and honest about the win now mentality there in Columbus. It's interesting in both in terms of how Ohio State could loom as a possible challenger to Georgia, but also about the larger mood around college football right now, where people just aren't really planning for the future. They're playing for the here and now in the present, and it's all about can you win a championship here in this moment, and who are the players that help me do just that? And that is Cruising Around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. As we wrap up here today, we'll do so with a golden shoe, and we'll give it to a couple of our Dog Nation colleagues here who did something pretty cool and clever last night. Kaylee Manziel, who works with us a lot of days here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, and Connor Riley, last night having the very first ever edition of the Dog Nation Oscars. Now, I mentioned earlier I did not know that this was a Daylight Savings weekend that we were springing forward. I also did not know that this was the weekend of the Academy Awards. That's not the kind of thing that's on my radar quite as much now as maybe it would have been years ago. But I love a good theme show. And Kaylee and Connor putting the Dog Nation Oscars theme together. How about the production work there on that? That's like special effects. And that's really pretty impressive. That's real. That's legitimate. Both parties getting really dressed up for the day. Kaylee with her dress. Connor with his jacket and tie. Well done in terms of the commitment to the bit. We'll give a golden shoe there for that. Invite you to check that on the Dog Nation YouTube page. Lousy Stinking Gators, they've got about as many Oscars these days as they do championships in football, and it's been 1,217 days since they've beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. We love all of that, and we're going to watch that number keep on climbing. Y'all have a great weekend, and we'll see you back here Monday. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.